Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your Collabs call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference call, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Hillary Jolen. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you so much, and thank you everyone for joining. Hopefully you've all been okay in this terrible weather we've had out there. Just want to introduce you to a couple people who are with me in the room. I have Rachel Block at the United Hospital Fund, and then also Dr. Brian Cole from Beth Israel Medical Center, Donna Armolino from North Shore University Hospital, and Rachel Strickoff from the New York State Department of Health. We're all on the speaker line right now. And Terry Straub from Greater New York will be joining us at some point during the call. We wanted to, again, we're diverting and going to the topic of Clostridium difficile, and we had a lot of people register for this call, showing that there's a lot of enthusiasm for this topic. And one of the things that we talked about with you during the last conference call in July, other than the New York State Department of Health coming on to talk about the public reporting initiative, Terry introduced all of you to a new initiative on Clostridium difficile that we're starting. The first steering committee meeting was on July 25th, 2007, and we told you that this call would really be devoted to giving you an overview of that meeting, some of the developments from that meeting, and where we will be taking this C. difficile initiative. So, again, as I mentioned, Dr. Brian Cole, the Chief of Infection Control at Beth Israel Medical Center and the physician consultant for the CLABS Collaborative, is with us. And we also asked Rachel Strickoff and Donna Armolino to join because they're part of the steering committee as well, just to give some insight on that first meeting. So we're going to start this off with Dr. Cole going over a document which we sent to you in a prior email. The document contained three different things, actually four. The first is some definitions with regard to C. difficile that were discussed during the meeting, an algorithm, and a potential C. difficile bundle, and some references we used along with the discussion during that steering committee to develop these documents. I just want to make note that these documents are still in draft form. The steering committee right now is reviewing them, and they're going to be making some changes to them. But before they're finalized, we just wanted to share this with you so it's sort of this ongoing process where we can get your feedback as we go through this really exciting new initiative. So without further ado, Dr. Cole, whenever you're ready to go through the document.
Okie doke. The steering committee, we met actually on Wednesday, the 25th of July, and it actually was a good meeting. I think it lasted for about 3 hours. And the steering committee at this point consists of 25 people representing 16 hospitals throughout the region of a variety of disciplines. And what we really tried to do was come up with some definitions that everybody could agree to regarding what exactly C. difficile is and what would be a healthcare-associated case of C. difficile, and then also come up with the beginnings of a bundle. So the first thing that I'd like to go through are actually the definitions. And the definitions that Hillary had sent out, actually we've already modified the language a little bit, hopefully to make it a little clearer. So the first thing really is, what is C. difficile? And C. difficile is really going to be a case where the patient has diarrhea without other known etiology and a stool sample is positive for a laboratory assay for C. difficile toxin A and B. And what we decided for the collaborative is that C. difficile cases are going to be limited to laboratory-confirmed cases, and that we're only going to focus on healthcare facility C. difficile instead of community-acquired C. difficile.
Hey, Brian, can you hang on one second? Are you on a speakerphone or we're hearing some clicking and it's
probably me. I'll come off speakerphone.
Okay.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hold on.
Sorry about that, everyone. Just hang on a sec.
Is that better? Is that better?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, Brian.
Okay. Then we decided was for healthcare facility associated C. difficile, that was going to be defined as a patient with onset of diarrhea 48 hours or more after admission to the hospital. And we base that pretty much on right now for CDC, National Healthcare Safety Network. And then if you look at least on this first page, we defined what recurrent C. difficile is, and that would be a case that occurred 8 weeks or less after the onset of a previous episode that resolved with or without therapy. And then we also spoke about Fox's flow. We spoke about additional positive results of a lab test on a specimen collected 2 weeks or less would be a continuation of the original case. A positive result of a test collected 2 to 8 weeks after would be recurrent. And that basically more than 8 weeks after that, the last specimen, it would represent a new C. difficile case. That was the beginnings of our definitions. And, you know, Rachel, I don't know if you want to add anything in terms of the definitions at this point.
No, the only thing I would say is the taxin A-B test is, it doesn't have to be taxin A and taxin B, but we felt that everybody should be using the screening test where they're looking for both in their facility. So it will be important to find out what test is being used in your lab. And something that we don't have in there, but I assume we would allow, would be culture for C. diff.
Donna, is there anything you want to add?
No, I don't have any other comments. I'm not sure how many labs would be doing culture at this point. So I guess when you send the survey out, we'll be able to see how many places are indeed doing a culture. Also, is it possible maybe a couple of facilities could just use this definition to make sure that there's no issues? I mean, I can't foresee there being a problem with this particular definition.
I think it would be a great idea that once we all agree on the definition to do a little bit of pilot testing to sort of iron out, any kinks.
Yeah, I think that would be a value.
Okay, and then lastly in terms of the definition is that once a specimen is positive by culture or toxin assay, EP testing would be discouraged during the initial bout of illness because the cultures and the toxins can be positive for prolonged periods of time. Okay, on the second page is the algorithm in terms of diagnosing C. difficile. And the first thing is patients in a healthcare facility with diarrhea, and a definition of diarrhea was decided on based on a couple of the papers that Hillary had sent out in the email, where you had three or more unformed or watery stools in a 24-hour period that conform to the shape of a specimen collection container. If somebody had that syndrome, then they met the definition for diarrhea, and it was felt that contact precautions should be started within 24 hours of admission, and then three stool specimens would be sent to the lab for C. difficile toxin A and or B. And if the test is positive, then we decided we wanted to treat this as a panic value where the micro lab would call the patient care unit within 4 hours of a positive test. And on the patient care unit, begin to apply elements of the bundle, which we'll talk about. Barring the testing, there's a larger box here where we had criteria for testing. One, again, was that you had to meet the definition for diarrhea. Number two is no more than one specimen should be submitted to the lab on a given day. If the first test is negative, a second and third specimen should be sent to the lab. Once a positive test is obtained, there's no need to send further specimens. and that the need to submit specimens for testing should not delay the start of antimicrobial therapy, as therapy does not rapidly eliminate the toxin from the stool. And one of the things that we just have found out, and I think we're going to have to arrive at some sort of consensus as a group, is the whole issue of how many specimens should be sent. My understanding that some facilities already have policies in place where it restricts the number of specimens to be sent, meaning that in some cases one would only be sent. And I think that'll be interesting to find out from all the participants in the project in terms of what everybody's protocol is for C. difficile testing. So, Donna, do you have anything to add on this part?
No, I just have a little concern about the communication between the units and infection control, and then when it is indeed a negative specimen, getting additional specimens sent. I'm not sure if every facility has a process in place that they get the negative, they do get the positive. And then what criteria do we need to meet? Is it the same criteria for the first one to send the second and third specimen?
We all are going to have to agree on the criteria because...
Okay, all right, I'm just...
No, you bring up a valid point. I mean, we just are all going to have to, again, that's why I said we're going to have to come to consensus.
Okay.
For that. I totally agree.
I just foresee that being, you know, an issue.
Rachel?
Yeah, I have no comment on that. But I don't think we can prescribe how it gets done as much as whatever the definition that we try and encourage facilities
right.
to implement it somehow.
Exactly.
And I guess we can look to everyone, just like on CLABS, to figure out what practices work and what don't to try and get that integrated.
And I believe that the survey that Greater New York and UHF has designed should help really delineate some of those issues. And the last page, then I guess, bundle itself. And we arrived at 5 components of the bundle. And the first part of the bundle would be discontinue the use of electronic rectal thermometers throughout the facility. I don't know how many of us still use those, but that would be the first one. Number 2 would be to notify the patient care unit, and we're expecting that the unit get notified by micro within 4 hours of a positive lab test. And Donna already hinted at some of the concerns about that. Part 3 is institution of contact precautions, and that what we're expecting is that they get implemented within 24 hours and that a sign be placed either on the door and or at bedside saying that the patient's on contact precautions, that the precautions are maintained for at least the duration of the illness, and that in terms of placement, we came up with a preferred hierarchy where a patient with C. diff, number 1, would be placed in a private room. Private room was not available. You would cohort with other patients with C. diff. And if that was not an option, option 3 would be the use of commodes, that there would be no shared bathrooms with uninfected patients. And then the last 3 part of contact precautions, number 1, healthcare workers wear gowns and gloves prior to entering the patient's room, that they remove them prior to exiting the patient's room, and that contact precautions are really maintained during patient transport and anywhere in the facility where the patient would need to go for testing and or a procedure. The 4th component is hand hygiene, and that we expect hand hygiene practice before and after providing care or any encounter with a patient having C. difficile, and that what we really, you know, had initially said was that strict adherence to hand washing with soap and water. And I think that part of the discussion was that if sinks are not readily available, that alcohol-based hand rubs can be used if gloves are used and gloves remain intact during all patient and environmental contact. The 5th component of the bundle is environmental cleaning, disinfecting, and dedicated equipment. And the 4 components of this bundle is that the patient's room is cleaned daily with a hypochlorite-based disinfectant, that terminal cleaning is done upon discharge with a hypochlorite-based disinfectant, and that would include bedside rails, et cetera, and changing of curtains and or cleaning of curtains, that all non-critical care that all non-critical patient care equipment, such as stethoscopes, blood pressure cuffs, non-invasive thermometers, would be dedicated, and that all common equipment would be cleaned and disinfected between patient use, such as a wheelchair or a stretcher. And then the last part, which is six, we threw this in the bundle, although this is really not something that we want to necessarily mandate. But what we would expect is that each institution have a protocol or policies and procedures in place for how they want patients with C. diff treated, be it use of metronidazole, vancomycin, et cetera. We're not really looking to say that if you participate in this that you have to first start with metronidazole or first start with vanco and when to switch and so on and so forth. And that's really, I think, where we are right now. Again, as Hillary said, this is draft, and a lot of this is up for discussion. And it'll be interesting, number one, to hear people's thoughts. What I really would hope is that everybody, in addition to sort of speaking up on the call, to let Hillary know what they like about the bundle, what they don't like about the bundle, and what's really being done at your facility. And I think there were sort of some questions that we would hope everyone can let Hillary know is, number one, facility performing culture for C. difficile, and that also how many specimens are being sent for C. difficile toxin assay. So, what is the protocol? Do you send one a day and stop at three? Do you continue on, six? Do you continue on forever? And lastly, do you measure for toxin A, toxin B, or both toxins? And I believe that was, really what I wanted to get through. So Rachel and or Don, is there anything you wanted to add to this?
Well, this is Rachel. One of the things that I'm thinking about is we have to be very clear under option two, which is cohorting, or I'd like other people's comments as well, that we don't want shared bathrooms even in that scenario. I think it's the latest disease models are showing that of the ability to get reinfected with another strain. So it's reminiscent of the TB situation where, there weren't enough rooms, so people cohorted, and then we ended up passing one person's organism to another. So I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that patients can acquire a different strain, and therefore we have to be very clear as to how best to cohort and what control measures need to be put in place even in that situation.
Donna, do you have anything else to add?
I have a question, actually, Brian or Rachel, if you happen to know. Under the contact precautions, where it talks about maintaining contact precautions during patient transport, I'm just curious if how much experience we have with trying to enforce compliance with this under other kinds of circumstances already, and if there are particular issues, or are there like training modules or what have you. I'm thinking partly in terms of, for purposes of measuring compliance with the bundle, how would we measure this? So that's one bucket of issues. But the other is more of a, what do we actually know about trying to implement this effectively, and what kinds of issues there are or barriers to implementing this, consistently?
This is Brian. I mean, it's a major challenge. It's not easy. I know North Shore has a system. I know we have a system. I know Sinai has a system that we all utilize that involves in-house training of different disciplines to really ensure that this has happened. And the measurement issue, not just for this component, but really I think for a variety of components of the bundle, is going to be an interesting discussion that we have at the steering.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this is not as black and white as it was for CLEBS.
Right.
Because we're really looking at practices. And you know, we're not with patients necessarily as they go from their room to x-ray and then, you know, to a procedure room.
On the other hand, that's part of the purpose of doing this, right, is to see if we can come up with some measures and then validate them and then other people could use them, right?
Exactly, and, right. And again, share best practices.
Okay.
So just as Dr. Cole said, we haven't come that far in the steering committee since there's been one meeting, but that was absolutely one of the next steps was to try to figure out how are we going to measure some of these process measures that we finally do come up with once this is finalized. So I bet a lot of people have comments or questions about this. Before we get to that, one of the things I just want to say is we'll be the group from the CLABS Collaborative, I just want to repeat this because Terry said this during the last call, the group that is part of the CLABS Collaborative will be receiving an application to apply for this initiative. So we'll go through that a little bit later in the call. But not everyone in the CLABS Collaborative will be required to participate in this initiative. It will be more of an application process like it was for CLABS. So, operator, can we open it up and see if anyone has any questions or comments about these materials?
Ladies and gentlemen on the phone line, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. First question comes from Jerry Gunnell.
Hi, this is Richmond University. My name is Donna.
Hi.
And we were concerned about number 3 option with the commodes. We agree with the speaker previously when they said that emptying the commode into the one bathroom they have available could spread the infection. And also, previously, someone mentioned wear gloves and they could still use Purell, that would work. We are led to believe that Purell doesn't kill spores. So we have 2 questions, basically. Are we going to keep option number 3 in? And Purell, is it still used, advised usage after gloves?
Purell, I can answer the Purell first. That's probably the easier question to answer. Purell does not kill spores. But at the steering committee, what we found was just, you know, what you mentioned. Pretty much every hospital says that for diarrhea or for C. difficile, want people to use soap and water. A couple of hospitals, there are areas where a sink is not available. And in that case, what we would say is use the Purell, provided that you had your gloves on and that there was no compromise of the glove's integrity. And that just seems to be the practice. And, you know, I don't know what you would do, say, at your facility or sinks everywhere, but I know here there are some areas where we are a little bit sink-challenged.
And this is Rachel. I'd like to respond to that as well. Dale Gerding had a presentation at ICAC, I believe, and they did show that there was a decrease in spore count, but not complete eradication with alcohol, and that soap and water was more effective. So the thought is that if people have gloves on, they are not getting gross contamination of their hands, and that the levels of spores would be, you know, quite low, we would hope. And so that if you add the gloves and the alcohol, it, you know, although not perfect, is likely to have to be effective. So I don't want people to think that there is absolutely zero activity. It's not as effective a mechanism of removing spores.
Our next question comes from Ann O'Brien.
Well, wait a minute. The prior person had one other question.
Yeah, one more question there.
About commodes, and I would just ask her, if possible, to repeat the question about the commodes.
Are they still on the line, operator, the Richmond Medical Center group?
If they can go ahead and just press the 1 key again. All right, we have them on.
We were interested in the usage of the commodes because when you're dumping the commode into a two-bedded room, we're still transmitting the C. difficile. So are we going to eliminate option number three?
I think the question is, what is the, if commodes were used, is there an appropriate standard of care, in effect, for the disposal and cleaning of those areas?
Yeah, this is Rachel, and I would second that. I think we have to come up with a protocol. In other words, you don't want them. I certainly would not want them emptying the commode in the bathroom, in a shared bathroom. And so the question is, can we take it elsewhere to, you know, a utility area? And I don't know the feasibility of that, but I think we have to be highly cognizant that certainly if it did get disposed of in the toilet, in the shared bathroom, that's going to lead to contamination beyond the toilet bowl itself.
Brian?
Excellent point.
Brian, do you have anything to add to that?
No. This was the discussion at the steering group, just that, in terms of you know, how best to handle this issue. And I don't think there is an easy answer. And we do both. In some cases they'll empty it in the dirty utility room. In others they will empty it in the shared bathroom. Now that the bathrooms are cleaned every day, but that's, we're going to have to come up with a practice that's feasible.
But I guess part of the point I thought might be that really commodes
number three should be eliminated.
Might also be used under option number two. So I think there is a little bit of a definitional issue here that there's really only two choices here. Either you're in a private room or you're not. And if you're not, you're using commodes, and what are you going
to
do
about
that?
Or not to let them in, you don't know. Once they had opened the door to get in, and plunge the plunger, then the whole system.
Hello? We can hear you, so I just want to let the person speaking know that.
I think this is a definite concern that definitely needs to be addressed, and I would really like to hear what other people either have done or have considered with regard to this. Because once a day cleaning is not going to be sufficient.
You can tell them we made signs, see if other people made special signs.
So, okay, why don't we then see if anyone else has other questions, and then think about that, participants on the line, this whole commode issue, and if you could tell us what you're doing with this, that would be great. One thing, we are going to be passing around a survey, Brian mentioned, and we can ask for a little bit more information if we don't hear anything today about this commode issue on that survey as well. So, operator, could you open the lines again to see if there's a comment about this or any additional questions?
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key. We have a question from Ann O'Brien.
Hi, Sam Marie from St. Vincent's, Manhattan.
Hi.
Hi. A couple of things. One is when you talked about using Purell, our IC chair, Bill Mandel, talked to somebody at the ID conference last year that published the papers on the Canada outbreaks of the highly toxin-producing strain. And even though they recommended hand hygiene with soap and water initially, as a follow-up, when he spoke to her directly, she felt that going back to soap and water actually led to decreased compliance with hand hygiene. So we've been debating this a lot, and I just wanted to put that out there for thought.
So kind of that trade-off issue.
Because she was pretty adamant, and then he became adamant then, you know, not to switch from the Purell. Second thought, I heard you say something about eliminating electronic rectal thermometers from the whole house. I don't see that in writing, but I think that's what you're...
It's not in writing yet. It's good, but it will be.
And then the other thing, when you talk about participation and figuring out the statistics, what are we going to use for denominator?
We were going to, at this
point, also, so.
At this point, what we were going to use is what was in the McDonald paper, which I believe was per 10,000
discharges. Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Excluding, we were going to exclude, I believe, pediatrics.
That's right. This we talked about having this initiative first focus on adults and get experience with that first.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. I'm showing no questions at this time, ma'am.
Okay. Well, just as follow-up then, the commode issue is still on the table, so I don't want the people who got a little bit, who asked about that, to think we're going to ignore that. Just some of the other things that Brian mentioned about the toxin and A and B test, we're just going to be asking some participants what they do with regard to testing and some of the other things that were mentioned as sort of open areas at this point. So the next steering committee meeting, I don't have my calendar here. It's at the
I just interrupt for one second?
Yes.
I would just, in addition to those things, I think the other thing that would be helpful besides the commode issue is if everybody would be able to email Hillary with I'll just say, one concern that they have in terms of either the definition, the algorithm, or the bundle. Because that'll go a long way to help the steering committee really focus on terms of how to make this work for everybody.
Thanks, Brian. And we can send a follow-up email to all of you asking you to give us one concern that you have with any of the documents or the discussion that you heard today. And it would be great, too, if we could get it before the next C. difficile steering committee meeting, which is at the beginning of September after Labor Day. I believe it's the first Wednesday after Labor Day. So we'll send out a reminder for you to do that because it will really help the discussion during that meeting. Is there anything else, Brian, Rachel, or Donna, before I talk a little bit about the application process and what we're thinking for that?
For me.
Okay. Terry, during the last call, talked a little bit about the application process. So we just want to give you kind of a little timeline, a time frame of when leadership at the hospitals and teams can be expecting more word about this. So first of all, we're just going to continue to keep you updated on the activities of the steering committee because, like I said before, we just want you to be as involved as possible and knowing the outcomes of some of these meetings. And that includes, after the steering committee talks a bit more about measurement, we'll let you know how that discussion goes. Our plan is, similar to the CLABS Collaborative, first develop an expression of interest describing the new initiative to the hospital CEOs just in the CLABS Collaborative. Our thought on that is keep it close to the CLABS Collaborative since all of you have already worked on reducing infections. I know other hospitals have too, but you have the interdisciplinary teams, physician champions, nursing champions, and just the general model for improvement already going on, so we wanted to keep it close to the CLABS group. And so an expression of interest will be sent to the CEOs from these hospitals about the new initiative, just describing it. And then we'll be developing an application as well, and that application will be sent to hospital CEOs somewhere around the end of the third quarter of 2007 or the beginning of the fourth quarter of 2007. Kind of like with CLABS, we will have a learning session and invite all the teams that are determined to be part of the initiative once the applications are fully evaluated. The plan for that is to have that sometime, and that we don't have exact dates for any of this now because it is so new, but our hope is to have it sometime during the fourth quarter of 2007. One thing I should say about the application process, and I know Terry stressed this a lot during the last call, One thing we really are going to require this time is timely data collection, because even now with the Collapse Collaborative, we have over 2 years with the Collapse Collaborative, and we still have to call certain hospitals and continuously ask them for their data. So really one of the requirements is going to be a commitment from leadership and from the team that you will submit the data to us on time without having us have to badger you for the data, for lack of a better way to put it. So just want to really stress that. And our hope, too, through this initiative, unlike CLABS, is to collect both process and outcome measures. And, again, the process measures is going to be a little bit – it'll be interesting discussion to identify the best ways to collect that. And some steering committee members already have some experience with some of the things we're trying to measure here. So that's really the general plan about it. And then the last part about it is we will be collecting baseline and monthly Clostridium difficile infection data. So more information will be given to you on exact time frames we'll be looking for that. So there was some discussion to get 6 months of baseline data and have the initiative start as the first post-baseline data point as December of 2007. But that's still under discussion, and it depends on how much progress we have in getting the bundle finalized. So, Brian, Donna, Rachel, did I leave anything out with that?
Rachel. Sounds complete to me.
Okay. So we'll open it up one more time and see if anyone has any questions about that general plan. Operator?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. We have a question from Jerry Gunnell.
Yes, hi. This is Donna from Richmond University.
Hi.
We were interested in knowing the isolation signs that we use throughout the hospital. Did any other hospital make up a specific sign for C. diff? Because we took our green contact sign and added on a supplementary sign showing use soap and water if the patient has C. diff.
I think that at least for the members of the steering group, it probably is about a 50-50 split. About half did what you've done, and the other half have a separate C. diff sort of contact precaution sign.
Oh, that's good. So they made a Clostridium sign.
But you know what?
Anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay, great.
Our next question comes from Jones Barrett.
Hi.
Am I on?
Yes. Hi, this is Judy Dilworth from NYU Medical Center.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. On the C. diff bundle, at NYU, when we suspect that a patient has C. diff, we put the sign on the door and implement precautions. I think 24 hours of a positive result is a little bit long. Mm-hmm. If you have 4 hours to get the result and then 24 hours after that, I think that's too long. And secondly, on the stethoscope issue, we try to have dedicated stethoscopes, but the clinicians complain that they really can't hear well. So we have problems with compliance in that. And so what we do is we just make sure that they bleach their stethoscope before and after use. That's my only comment.
Thanks, Judy. Brian, do you want to address that? There were, during the steering committee, some conversation back and forth about both those.
The time frame. I remember we had the discussion that we expected patients to be started on contact precautions within 24 hours. In terms of just what you just mentioned, when somebody is suspected of having C. diff, but it really would be anyone with diarrhea. We would expect contact precautions started within 24 hours. And the truth is we would expect that to be started immediately. The reason that I thought we said the 24 hours was when we were beginning to speak about some of the measurement components is what were we going to do on the weekends and holidays,
right,
and so on and so forth. Donna, do you remember anything more than that on that part?
I think Donna might have cut off.
I said the same thing Judy did, and that's that we really, I think our goal was to get people immediately on precautions, but I think as far as a measurement, we were going to measure by ensuring that everyone was on precautions within 24 hours. So I do think that maybe a way to address this is our protocol should call for placing a patient immediately on contact precautions, but the measurement indicator would be as documented in the record within that first 24-hour period.
Right, and when you look at the bundle, it's not to add another 24 hours to make it 48 hours after. I think that's just, we can work on the phrasing.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't based on the positive result. It was based on the onset of diarrhea and obtaining, you know, the suspicion of C. diff that people would immediately, we're going to call for immediately placed on as far as being able to measure it. We're going to use the other indicators. So we need to make that very clear.
So we can work on the language.
We'll clear up the language. It is a little bit vague right now, so we can sharpen that up a little bit.
And we should be 24/7, and not. I mean, Seiko would really frown upon looking at weekends and holidays as exemptions.
No. We're talking about a measurement part, not in terms of the measurement component.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it was. It certainly wasn't that on weekends, if you get your diarrhea on Saturday, you don't go on.
Definitely not.
And just reading this, the intent is, as you said and what Rachel said, and just reading it, it gives you a different feel.
Yeah, right.
And the fear really has to do with the measurement component.
Right.
And then with the stethoscopes, we all talked about the stethoscopes because no one likes stethoscopes. And, you know, each institution again, from my recollection, is they're either using sani wipes or they're using bleach or they're using alcohol to clean the stethoscopes. And I still think that's going to be something that has to be discussed.
Okay.
Either that or someone, we can all probably get rich if we design a good stethoscope that's cheap and you know, once per patient.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judy.
Hi, this is Donna. Could you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you now.
Oh, okay, because I was on the conference side. I just wanted to get clarification on the thermometer. Is the expectation to have no rectal thermometers at all, or just no rectal thermometer for those patients that are suspected or known to be positive?
Does I think we were talking about no electronic thermometers that go from patient to patient. Certainly use regular rectal thermometer if it's for single patient only.
Okay.
But we were discouraging the electronic thermometers with just the sheath in going from patient to patient. That we want eliminated.
All right, because that may set up some process issues on the hospital end because of the various devices that they are currently using and, you know, phasing in rectal thermometers or dedicated patient, you know, thermometers over time.
Well, all we can say is there are numerous articles for that justification.
Okay, all right. All right, because some places use disposables to suspected and known, and then they have dedicated oral and dedicated rectals.
We have a question on the phone line from Bernice Gordon.
Hello.
Hi, Bernice.
Hi, Bernice.
Hi, this is Maxine. I'm with Bernice.
Hi, Maxine.
How is everyone?
How are you?
Fine, thanks. I just wanted to clarify what we do in Mount Sinai. For our stethoscope, all patients on contact for C. diff or any other, or ORSA, we have dedicated stethoscope, disposable. So once the staff go in and use it, it either stays in the room or it's tossed after the patient leaves. So the docs or the nurses don't have to use their own private, you know, stethoscope on patients with isolation. The second thing we do is when a patient is identified as having diarrhea, we immediately quarantine them. We do not wait for the 4 hours. We actually start moving beds around until we get a positive culture or a negative one, and then we'll take them off. And concerning rectal thermometers, we don't use them in the hospital except for peds and in the ambulatory clinic for the pediatric patients.
But are you well, I think the problem with that's a very good point, but people, we have clearly seen a problem with the sheathed electronic rectal thermometers.
Right.
So, and there has been an increasing problem of C. diff in infants, so I think you really should look at your practices. It's fine to have individual rectal thermometers,
mm-hmm.
Or others. It's just the electronic sheathed
right.
rectal thermometers going from patient to patient at any age.
I see. So I'll bring that back to everyone concerned, especially in pediatric and ambulatory. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Maxine.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Our next question comes from Jerry Gunnell.
Yes, this is Richmond University again. With concern with the DC policy on the C. difficile, when do you know that you're going to DC the patient off isolation?
What right now is written in the draft bundle is what's recommended by the CDC, which is that contact precautions are maintained for at least duration of illness. So when somebody stops having diarrhea, that's when, if you want, you can consider DCing precautions. And again, each hospital has their own algorithms. For us, we keep people on precautions until they're discharged.
Brian, I think you should consider a minimum time frame, though, of at least 48 hours after diarrhea ceases or something. And maybe Donna would like to make a suggestion.
I mean, up until recently, we were doing the same thing that Brian Cole was doing up until discharge. I thought the last conference call we had was 48 hours of being asymptomatic, and then we would discontinue them, discontinue the precautions.
It was 48 to 72.
Okay.
But, again, that would be something that would have to be a consensus for the minimum.
Symptom-free, 48 to 72 hours.
And I don't think we're considering saying, if you already keep them on throughout the duration of hospitalization and you have the capability to do that, we would probably still encourage that. Correct, Brian and Donna?
Correct. For me.
So it's just this is a minimum,
correct.
Not the maximum.
Right, that's correct.
Depends on the hospital's policy.
Richmond, any other questions about that?
No. We're considering maybe after obtaining a negative specimen that we would DC. But if you feel 48 hours to 72 symptom-free, we use the same policy for that also. We were just wondering if you implemented the specimen had to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that you can be positive for C. diff after resolution of the illness. So that's why, that's why it wouldn't be something that I think we would want to codify. And probably we should just always on a minimum time that meets ICE's everybody's policies.
Yeah, it's been discouraged to reculture because it's so likely that they will be positive.
Operator, is there anyone else in the queue?
Our next question comes from Bernice Gordon.
Hi, it's me this time. I do have a question regarding the stool issue. Is it the time or is it the stool
being formed?
Is it the time that we're talking about or is it the stool being formed that we are looking at for taking the patient off precautions?
It's when they no longer have diarrhea, using your definition and the definition that would be agreed to by the steering committee.
So we're looking at a form stool to some degree.
Correct. So you'd have to have less than 3 bowel movements a day, and you'd have to have form stool for 24 to 48 to 72 hours, I guess 48 to 72.
Yeah, because that's how we're looking at it, as a stool. What's the stool doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, anyone else?
I'm showing no questions at this time, ma'am.
Okay. So, we got some really great input from all of you. Just want to say that. Just as Brian said, if you could send me, Hillary, that is, anything about this once you've had time to kind of gel this in your mind a little bit more, any comments or concerns with the document, the definitions, the bundle, the draft bundle, or the draft algorithm, send them our way. as mentioned, the next steering committee meeting, I think it's September 5th. So it would be great if we could get it before then, but we'll send you a reminder. The only other thing I wanted to say about this, similar to what we did with the CLABS Collaborative, we're going to be developing a C. difficile portion of the Jenny website, since the CLABS portion was so overwhelmingly positive and people really liked it. So we're going to do the same thing for C. difficile. And before we open it up one last time, Donna, Rachel, or Brian, is there anything else you want to add?
Not me.
Okay.
No, I don't have anything else to add. You know, just a little concern about some of these major changes from an institutional standpoint.
Okay.
You know, for example, the thermometers. Even as simple as the curtains, I know it sounds basic, and yes, I agree we should be changing curtains once a patient is transferred or discharged, but there's, you know, FTE issues that are attached to that, as well as some time issues, and also with the flow of the patients from the ED to a receiving area. So it will affect some of the hospital processes.
Okay. So, Donna, this is actually one of the things we can put these kinds of issues on the agenda for the next steering committee meeting, too.
Okay.
Out with the smaller group.
All right. And then also as far as looking at the bundle measurements, are we going to look at 100% versus maybe, you know, 20% of the positive cases?
I thought our goal was 100%.
No, no. I mean, if that's what we all decide, it's 100% of bundle monitoring of every patient, then, you know, that's what we could do. But I was just wondering, from a feasibility standpoint, does everyone have the time to look at every one of these cases and then monitor each component of the bundle? It's very time-consuming. But that's up for discussion.
That's up for discussion. Okay. So we're going to probably close in a minute, but just want to see if there's any last outlying questions or anything out there from participants. So, operator, one more time before we close.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment to make at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. I'm showing no one in queue at this time, ma'am.
Okay, well, thank you so much, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and we'll be back in touch really soon with follow-up.
Thanks, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes our program for today. You may all disconnect and have a wonderful day.